My name is Pratap. I work on the Visual Studio team building diagnostics tooling. And the goal of our team is to enable you build apps that work great on Windows 8.1 on all of the form factors on which it is available. And in today's talk, I'm going to cover about what kind of tooling we have for the XAML-based application developer. So all of the tools that I'm going to touch upon are in the realm of performance. So I'll take some time to set the context on what I mean by performance, and then use that to frame the tools that VS has to help you reason about performance. And then we look at each of the tools in turn. So there are this is going to cover multiple tools. It's going to span multiple tools. So the coverage is going to be very broad, but I hope to provide enough glimpses of the tools so that you can go back and drill down further. And through the course of this talk, I also hope to establish some kind of a mental model that ties together what consumers perceive about your application in terms of performance, what kind of tools VS has in that space, what kind of information it surfaces, and then how do you interpret that information. So studies like this and others, they underscore how consumers perceive your application in terms of performance. So sure, it should not crash and all that, as it shows in this graph. It should not crash, obviously. But observe that other dimensions are also perceived. It has to be fast. The experience has to be smooth. You don't want a scenario where something freezes on you. And battery usage is getting increasing prominence. So in this particular study, 99% of the respondents said that they would take some action if the app didn't perform as expected or as advertised. And half of them went on to further say that they would delete the app. So performance seems to be a very common reason for even providing feedback on your applications. And richness of functionality is not the sole driver for purchases. So consistent performance across a range of hardware, that will drive better reviews, happier customers, more downloads, and hopefully better opportunities for monetization. Right? So we can formalize these perceptions along these so-called pillars of performance of fast, fluid, and efficient. So think about fast as when your app is launched, or when you're navigating between pages, or when you're changing orientation. You want that experience to be very snappy. And in terms of traditional performance analysis, that is when you want to take the least amount of time to go from point A to point B. So you're at, we have done that in the past using critical path analysis. You look at what lies in the critical path to get from point A to point B and then optimize around that. But unfortunately, that might not work in the case of store applications because a lot of the costs that you might incur are incurred within the UI frameworks which are doing work on your behalf, on behalf of the application. So going back to that mental model, I'll try to touch upon what are those costs, why do you even incur them, and then how you can drive them down, and how VS surfaces all of that information. Fluid is a little different. So fluid is, imagine you have, you know, you're scrolling through a list, or you're panning, or you have animations going. You don't want a situation where there are glitches or something freezes on you. And to get to a fluid experience, you need to know a little bit about composition, GPU workloads, video refresh rates, and the budgets associated with all that, so that the screen can be updated at the appropriate cadence. Efficient is all about being a good system citizen, about how you manage your consumption of battery and memory, and so on. So if there is one resource that can kill your app stone dead, that's battery life, or the lack of battery life, right? So I'll touch upon battery performance and opportunities of optimization and all that. And then finally, there's memory. Leaks are bad, but as you accrue leaks, you might end up consuming too much memory, and then termination policies in the platform might kick in, and your app can get terminated. Now, as an app developer, you cannot make any assumptions about what kind of hardware your consumers have. You can't assume that they'll always have high performance, high-end hardware. So you need to be thoughtful about how you approach performance along these pillars. And VS has tools for helping out in this space. And in particular, we look at these four tools. So we look at the XAML UI responsiveness tool. This is the XAML application profiler. And the premise behind this tool is to surface performance reporting in the domain that it is targeted at. So rather than surfacing performance reporting in terms of call graphs and function names and so on, it will surface performance information in terms of elements, in terms of templates, in terms of parsing, in terms of layout, and so on. CPU sampling is the other tool. This is the more traditional code profiler that we have. This will surface information in terms of call graphs and function names and modules and all that. This is pretty much the same experience that we shipped with VS 2012. The energy consumption tool is a tool that observes the resources that your app is consuming as it is running. And then it gives you a sense of what that costs you in terms of energy. So specifically, we look at CPU, network, and display. And finally, there is the memory dump analysis. Now, this is more geared towards production environments. So if you have an app which you think is leaking memory, or you can take periodic snapshots of the heap and then use the tool to compare those snapshots, see how the heap has evolved between snapshots, look at what are the objects, what is their connectivity, and then discover patterns, memory leaks, and so on. Now, the memory performance, right, the allocation performance and retention and all, these are typically device agnostic. But the others, the UI performance, the code performance, and the energy performance are very device sensitive. So you want to make sure that you run the workload on the device on which you want to assess performance. And to enable that, VS supports remote profiling. So you can actually hook up a tablet or a remote device and profile on that. And you set up remote profiling in exactly the same way you would set up a remote debugging session. And finally, we made it kind of easy to discover all these tools by aggregating them into a single launch page. And we'll see that shortly. We aggregate them into a single launch page where all the tools show up, which are relevant to the app that you want to diagnose. And then you select the tool, you select the launch target, local, remote, simulator, and so on, and hit go, and you can start profiling the diagnosing the app. Okay, so now let's start looking at each of these tools in one by one. Now, the XAML UI responsiveness tool, right? So when you want to diagnose an app in terms of fast and fluid, okay, it's useful to know about what the UI framework is doing on your behalf. I told you, right, that a lot of the costs tend to be incurred in the UI frameworks, which are doing work on your behalf. What are those costs? Why are you even paying them, right? So at the end of the day, what does the UI framework buy you? So one way to look at it is what it buys you is output and input. So the elements that you describe in your application, in XAML or wherever, the elements that you describe, it pushes them out to the screen. And then whatever the user interacts with them, it plumbs that input back into your controls and your code. So that is the kind of functionality that the UI framework provides you. And in order to enable that, it provides you a specific set of services. So for example, in the case of XAML, it loads and parses all your XAML, where you have described all your elements, right? It loads and parses them. It then builds the element tree. That element tree itself, the element tree represents what it wants to finally visualize. That itself has to then be exposed as an object model so that the events can be plumbed through, right? Then it has to figure out how the formats and styles flow through that element tree. And then this can involve application of templates, which will determine how your elements look. And then it has to figure out how big is everything, how large is everything, where on the page they lie, how to flow it. And the end result of all that is a visual tree, not the element tree, a visual tree. And the visual tree is then used for two purposes. One, hit testing for input, and then rasterization. And in the context of rasterization, this element tree is, this visual tree is traversed, and then primitives are generated onto surfaces and pushed down to the compositor for final presentation. Now, the compositor takes many such surfaces, composes them, and does the final presentation by flipping it to the screen. Okay, so this is kind of the pipeline that is going on, and there are two threads which bear this workload. There's the UI thread, which does everything up to the generation of primitives, and then there's the compositor, which is doing the final presentation. So how do you manage these loads? How do you reduce the cost? How do you drive it down? So one of the typical ways that you want to do this is simplify. It works in almost all the cases. You want to simplify. The less elements you're dealing with, the less work the framework has to do on your behalf. Okay, so parse less, create less elements. Be aware of every XAML that is getting displayed on screen, which means that you have to know about what are the elements that have got laid out, how long they took, what are the templates, what did each of those templates cost you in terms of element count. Okay, you take advantage of content virtualization. Avoid dependent animations. So there are so many things that you can do. The framework actually supports independent animation and direct manipulation with the intent of providing this, you know, fluid kind of experience. But in spite of that, if you see glitches, then it is because composition itself is trying to do too much. And that is because maybe you have too many visual parts that you're trying to display at the same time with some opacity and all that. Or you're trying to push too many screenfuls of data to the screen, a very high fill rate, right? And then you have to be aware that throughout this pipeline, app code can run at various points, especially when XAML calls back into your code, like at an onload event or measure and arrange overrides, per frame callbacks. So there are case points where it calls back into your code, and then you have to be aware that where in that code, in that pipeline your code is executing. So generally you have to keep a tab on all of these things. So let me show you a demo of how all this looks like in the XAML UI response in this tool. So I have an app over here. Let me switch to the demo machine. I have an app over here, and let me just launch that. So this app is nothing. It's just it simulates a bunch of particles moving around in a box, within a bounded box. And you can see that I'm able to meet about 60 frames per second, which is what we need for a very fluid kind of experience. Now, the particles which are moving about, these are modeled as a particle object which has an x and y coordinate. And the app itself is registering for a per frame callback through the composition target.rendering event. So it registers for a per frame callback by adding an onRendering method. And in that method, we update the x and y coordinates of all these particles. Okay? And the particles themselves are represented as ellipses, which are moving about on a canvas. And the movement is done by associating a translate transform with the ellipse, which is data bound to the x and y coordinates of the particle. Okay? By default, I have 100 particles moving around on the screen, and I'm able to meet 60 frames per second. But when I increase it to 800, if I add 700 more particles, then you can see that the movement is a little, you know, jittery. And corresponding to that, my frame rate has also dropped to below 30. It's, I think, around 25 or 24, right? So why is this? Is it because composition is doing too much? Is it because parsing is doing too much? Are you laying out too many elements? Is it a UI thread issue? Is it a composition issue? What is it? How do you figure that out? And to figure that out, we can run this workload through the XAML UI responsiveness tool. So let me... let me show you how to do that. So here's the app. Here's the launch page that I was telling you about. All the tools applicable to this application show up here. And now I'm going to select on the XAML UI responsiveness tool. And my target is going to be local machine. For this case, it's okay. And then I'm going to hit start. I'm going to let the app run for a couple of seconds so that you can see that it's hitting 60 frames. Excuse me. And then I'm going to go up to 800 particles, add 700 more, and then see that the frame rate has dropped. And now I'm going to stop the profiling session. Now the app has generated a bunch of data while it was running, and now we are going to visualize what is going on, right? I think I can kill the app if it's still running. I'll close it, and I'll kill it. Okay, so here is what is going on. Let's go through this UI for a second. There's a ruler right at the top which tells you how long the scenario ran. And then there are a couple of swim lanes. The first swim lane tells you what is the load on the UI thread due to various activities. This is color-coded. So there is some parsing activity, there is some layout activity, there is some per-frame callbacks going on, and so on. Below that is another swim lane which tells you what is the frame rate that those two threads are able to keep up. Okay? And below that is a details pane which tells you a breakup of whatever you see on the swim lane. So for example, if you want to know what is getting parsed, which is the blue bars in the top swim lane, in the bottom there is a parsing view that is on by default which tells you what are the files that have been parsed. So this is a Gantt representation of all the files that got parsed. It tells you the names of the file, the sequence in which they got parsed, how many elements they created, what was their start time, end time, and so on. If you want to know what were the elements that got laid out, then you go into this hot elements view. Sorry?
It's difficult to see. Zoom in from back.
I'm not sure how to do that. Is that how it is? Okay. So this was the parsing view I was telling about, and this will be the hot elements view. Now in this case, the hot elements view actually tells you all the elements that participated in layout in the selection that you made, and by default the entire time range was selected. All the elements that participated in layout grouped by their template and then sorted in descending order. So the costliest group floats to the top. So you know which is the set of items that are consuming the most time when you do a layout. Further, you can expand each of these. So in this case, we see that 800 content presenters participated in this layout. What were they? Right? So you can expand these, and it shows you that each of these content presenters was using the geometry item template. And now if you go back to your source code, you'll know that I was using that as my template for representing the particles. And each of those templates had an ellipse and a translate transform. So each of those templates cost me two elements. So that's how you can correlate what is getting laid out on screen and get a detailed breakdown so that you know where to concentrate on. Do you have too many elements that are getting laid out? Are your templates costly? And so on. Right? So in this case, what we have seen is Windows plus. How do I go back to normal? Escape? All right, I think this is the default. Okay, so in this case, what we are seeing is initially when we had a burst of layout, 100 content presenters were laid out, which represents the 100 particles that are on by default. There was a second burst of layout here where 700 more were added, so total of 800 particles, right? Now what has happened is, in the interim, when we had 100 particles bouncing around, the UI thread as well as composition were able to maintain 60 frames per second. There was some load on the UI thread because of the per frame callbacks, but they were able to maintain 60 frames per second. When I added 700 more, the load on the UI thread has gone up. Look at the green bars, they've gone up. The per frame callback costs have gone up. And at the same time, the UI thread is not able to keep up. Right? So it's not able to present data, it's not able to push data at the cadence required to maintain 60 frames per second. So in this case, the jitter or the stutters that we saw is not because composition is not able to do too much, not able to keep up, or there was too much parsing and all that. It was because there was a huge cost in per frame callbacks impacting the UI thread. So right off the bat, we're able to figure out if there is an issue with Fluid, what is the cause for that? In terms of all the services that XAML is providing to us. Okay? So typically, what we do is when you have run your workload through the tool, this is the kind of analysis flow that you would go through. So suppose you have a problem with source startup or navigation between pages, if that's what you feel, and then you run it through the tool, then you look at, hey, is my UI thread FPS low? Is there a lot of load seen on the UI thread because of parsing? If it is because of parsing, what am I parsing? You audit all those files. Are they really required? Is every element within the files that you parse really required? For example, you might include, say, standards files or XAML or some such common file which has a ton of information that may not be really required for you to just get your page on screen. So you want to audit all those files. You want to audit all the content within that files and make sure that you're parsing only the absolute bare minimum required to get up and running. If you see a lot of layout on screen, for example, when you're navigating in between pages, again, you want to look at why is that? Is it because there were just too many elements? Is it because you were using templates which are too costly? Is it because content virtualization somehow broke? For example, if you know that you have a list view, list box which can only say show you 20 elements or something like that, right? If in that group within the parentheses we saw a count, right? If you suddenly see that count has gone up to say 500, and let's say your backing store had 500 elements, then you know that for whatever reason maybe you applied some template which caused the virtualization to get broken. Right, so you can quickly spot why you're doing too much of layout and then drive those costs down. Okay, if you see app code running on the UI thread, in our case we saw that per frame callbacks are taking a lot of time. If you see app code running on UI thread, you can then go and now you are in the domain of code profiling. So you can then launch the CPU profiler, the sampling tool, and then get to the bottom of that. Right? Similarly, if you have issues related to jittery scrolling and panning and all that, again, you do a similar kind of analysis. Why is it? Is the UI thread FPS low? If it is low, why? Are you doing too much of layout? Similar analysis as before. Is the composition taking a hit? In that case, you want to go back on some debug flags to see whether you're doing too much overdraw, what kind of a heat map is being there. You can do all of that. Right? So this is the kind of analysis that we would do once you run the workload through the profiler. Now I'll just show you, in our case we saw that there are lots of per frame callbacks, right? So let me go in and show you how to diagnose that. I'll run this same workload through the CPU sampling tool. So again, go to the launch page, run it through the CPU sampling tool, okay? Let it run for a little bit. We are able to hit 60 frames per second, add 700 more particles. The frame rate is dropping, okay? And now let's stop the profiling and see if we can figure something out. So the CPU sampling tool is collecting a sample every second of as your app is running. And what it does is it's going to tell you what were the modules that were most commonly used, what are the functions that were most commonly used. It can show you just for your code or for the entire system, and so on. By default, it's just showing your code. And notice that just like we had a hot path in the case of the XAML tool, we have hot elements, we have a hot path in the case of the CPU tool. And right off the bat is showing you that, hey, the onRendering method here, where my mouse is right now, the onRendering method is taking a bunch of time. And its child, the notify property changed, is taking 98% of the time. So this goes back to how the app itself has been written, right? I told you that the app registers for a per frame callback using an onRendering event handler, and in that I am changing the x and y coordinates of the particle. And when I change the x and y coordinates of the particle, the ellipse has to move, right? So I raise this notify property changed event, which causes the binding data binding machinery to kick in to such an extent that the frame rate dropped. So this is how, when you have an app a performance issue, you can use a suite of tools to get down to the bottom of it. So in this case, we started off with a fluidity issue on a XAML app, went through the XAML UI tool, and eventually came down to the CPU profiler and narrowed down the problem. So CPU load, when we had 100 particles going on, is somewhere around this range. The load was low. And when we had 800 particles, the load was high. Okay. So this is an example of how you can use these two tools. All right. So the CPU sampling tool, like I said, is pretty much the same experience as we shipped in 2012, so I won't go into too many details there. So now let me go back to my PPT machine. Okay, so we just saw this. Now let's change gears. efficiency. So we saw fast and fluid. So you use the XAML UI tool and the CPU sampling for fast and fluid. Now let's go to efficiency, and in particular, battery efficiency. So just like there is a cost model involved with using the UI frameworks, there is a cost model, there's an energy cost model involved with using the various resources that your app has access to while it is running. So in particular, CPU, networking, display, and so on. Now in modern hardware, it's very difficult to very precisely and accurately attribute energy usage to all of the resources on the system. And that's not even what we are trying to do. What the tool does is it discovers segments in your scenario that are energy hungry. It discovers what resources were being used during those segments, and then gives you an estimate of what that would cost you in terms of energy. Now, the good thing about this is we are able to do this without imposing the need to hook up, you know, energy meters and specialized hardware and all that. On any stock device, it should be possible. There are n number of resources on a device that consume energy, but empirically we find that display, network, CPU tend to dominate. So this tool is only going to worry about those, is only going to track these resources. So CPU energy is directly a function of its utilization. So you want to drive down utilization as much as possible. And the typical way to manage CPU energy consumption is to get quiet and stay quiet. So you want to go through your workload on the CPU as quickly as you can and then put it to sleep. You don't want to periodically wake up. So you want to get quiet really quick and then stay quiet as long as you can in deep sleep. Display power is a little different. It varies depending on whether you are on LCD or OLED. So for on LCD, it is primarily a function of brightness, the backlight brightness. Whereas on OLED and AMOLED, it can be conditioned by the colors as well. But by far, the most opportunities for optimization are available with networking, especially when you're using the cellular and Wi-Fi networks. Okay, so in this section of the talk, I'll just dwell on that a little bit and optimization opportunities around that. And then I'll touch upon memory consumption as well. So the thing to keep in mind for wireless communication is all wireless networking happens over a shared spectrum. So there's no dedicated wire running between you and between a source and a destination. It's all happening over a shared spectrum. And there has to be some kind of a negotiation protocol that has to be followed before you can start transmitting. Okay? And in the case of Wi-Fi, that negotiation protocol is something like this. So Wi-Fi looks to see if anybody is transmitting. If nobody is transmitting, it begins transmitting. If it detects a collision, it backs off, waits for a random amount of time, and then retries. So it's a fairly simple negotiation protocol that it follows. And the consequence of that is that Wi-Fi cannot guarantee any minimum performance. It is very sensitive to congestion. So for example, in this hall, if all of us start using the Wi-Fi at the same time, the performance will drop. We'll all start trying to talk over each other. We'll all back off and so on. In the case of cellular, it's different. Cellular has different design constraints. So cellular is designed to provide stable and scalable performance across thousands of devices within a cell, so to speak. And so the negotiation protocol that cellular goes through is different than what Wi-Fi goes, slightly more involved. And in this case, it involves an external authority called a radio resource controller. And here is how that negotiation happens. So let's say that you have an app and it wants to transmit data and your device is idle. So the radio first connects with the RRC, the radio resource controller, which lives with the network, and says, hey, I want to transmit some data. Now the RRC is going to consult information that it has about the network, the load and all that, and then it gets back saying that, okay, you can transmit in so-and-so time slots for so-and-so signal strength or something like that. Right? Now the app can go and then start transmitting its data. After it's done transmitting, after a predetermined period of inactivity, the RRC tells the radio, go to a lower power state. So the RRC tells the radio, go to a lower power state. And the, in anticipation that if there is again a need for transmission, it can quickly, the radio can quickly negotiate with the RRC and restart transmission. Okay? But if that doesn't happen, then after a further period of inactivity, the RRC tells the radio, go into idle. So the RRC is instructing the radio on what power states it should be in. So it's like a state machine with time-bound transitions. Okay? In this case, I have called out some timings here, like 5 seconds for the first period of inactivity, 12 for the second. These are kind of indicative of 3G networks, but it could vary a little bit here and there. But the point is that the RRC operates like a state machine with time-bound transitions. Now, this has implications for latency for sure, like I've called out some numbers here, but it has specific implications for energy. And the implications are through so-called tail state energies. And I'll give you an example of that. Let's say your app wants to transmit data. App 1 says, hey, I want to transmit data. It goes to the RRC, does some negotiation, gets clearance to transmit. So that takes about 2 seconds. Then it sends 2 seconds worth of data and then stops. So after 5 seconds after that, it goes into low power. And 12 seconds after that, if you remember that earlier state diagram I showed, 12 seconds after that, it goes into idle. So that is 17 seconds for the radio to step its way down to idle. Okay? During which time the app was not even using it. So it's wasted, right? Now 1 second after that, again the app says, hey, I want to transmit some more data. So the whole cycle repeats. So in the case of app 1, if you notice that there has been 4 seconds worth of active use of the network, and then there have been 34 seconds of a wasted tail of energy states. Okay? Now take app 2 for example. It's doing the same thing, but it coalesces those two chunks into one burst of 4 seconds and then steps its way down to idle power. Now app 2 has not only used the radio resource very optimally, it has not only taken less time, but it also has a shorter tail of wasted energy states. Right? So when you think about, like I said, right, display radio CPU. Radio is one of the most expensive resources on the device, and keeping it on for a long time, wasting energy in these tail states by having, you know, chatty transmissions. These are all very effective ways to drain your battery. You want to be very conscious to avoid it. And that is one of the things that the tool can tell you about. So I'll show you an example of how the tool can let me go back to the demo machine. I think I can kill this app. Okay, so I already did a trace on my machine earlier where I ran an app using a 3G network. Okay, I ran a workload on 3G. This is a news reader app. And I just launched the app and just let it run for 3 minutes or so. And look at the way it has been keeping the radio active. Now, the UI itself, let's take a quick look at that. There is one swim lane at the top. There's a ruler as before. And then there's a swim lane which shows the power being used by the display, the CPU, and the network. Okay? So that you can see how much they consume in relation to each other. So there's the swim lane right at the top, which tracks power usage. You can make a selection on the range, and then on the right side, we show you a donut, which gives you a distribution of within that range, which resource was dominating, how much power was it consuming. And then there is this details view at the bottom, which in this case, it is showing me that I was using the 3G network. Okay, and look at the data transfers. Now, every transfer that is happening, every transfer that happens resets the timeouts, those 5 second, 12 second, resets those timeouts and cycles the radio back to the high energy state so it can do the transmission. So in this case, there have been little bursts of transmission, right? Like, I think in this case, it's probably, if I get the tooltip, 72 bytes or something was sent. There's just a chirp. But the chirp was enough to cycle the radio back to high energy state, resets the timeout, and then it took another, 14, 17 seconds for the radio. It stayed alive here before it went to idle state. Okay, I then ran the same load, but this time I used a Wi-Fi network. So again, it tells me, hey, these are the points in time when you did your transmissions. But Wi-Fi, like I said, right, doesn't go through this RRC and all that. It doesn't have to guarantee any performance, minimum performance and all. So the tails on Wi-Fi are a lot lower, as you can see here. Right?
Yeah.
So the I'll come to that. The standard battery is on a reference device on which we have done all of this modeling. So like I said, right, we want to enable this kind of functionality without forcing you to have power meters and customs, tricked out devices and all that. So we do this using a software model. So the model is a trained model on various kinds of devices, and it's typical of the so-called lower end of devices that are very sensitive to battery, not the kind of devices that are always going to be tethered and always going to be powered on. So the standard battery here would represent the kind of battery that you would have on a lower end device. Now, what this tool enables is, first of all, of course, it tells you what are the resources and how much they are consuming in terms of energy and all that. But here is one more thing that you might want to try out. Let's say you have a workload that you have a choice. You can do it locally on device, or you can hand it off to some cloud. Okay? Let's say you want to apply filters on, say, some 50 images or something like that. Now, you can do that entire workload locally, in which case you would pay CPU energy, or you can hand it off to some cloud service, get it done there, and then download the result. In this case, you would pay networking energy. Right? So there are two options that are available to you. Of course, there are latency differences as well. But as a developer, you now have the facility to evaluate these kinds of options. Should I download compressed data and decompress on CPU and pay CPU energy? Or should I download uncompressed data and directly use it and pay networking energy to take longer to download? Various kinds of trade-offs you can start evaluating by playing around with the load using these tools. Should I do transmission over 3G only, or should I do only Wi-Fi? Should I always check whether Wi-Fi is available before I do my transmissions? All those trade-offs you can do. So you can use this tool basically to play around with your workload and try to see what is best for your scenario, keeping in mind all these variables, latency, energy use, and so on. Okay, let me go back to the demo machine, the PPT machine. Okay, I have one more thing to cover here. The memory analysis tool, right? So the memory analysis tool is geared more towards apps that are already ready, apps in production. So if you feel that your app is leaking memory or using too much memory, okay, and you can figure that out by looking at some counters that come from Windows and all that. If you feel that your app is using too much memory, then you can generate snapshots of the heap at various points in time. Okay? And then you can use VS to inspect those heaps. And then you can diff heaps. So you can not only inspect one snapshot of a heap and see what are the objects in that, what is their connectivity and all that, you can then diff two heaps. And when you diff two heaps, you can see if memory has grown, if memory for any particular type has grown. If it has grown, what are the references that are holding on to it? Okay, so this kind of discovery you can do by taking periodic snapshots of the heap and then diffing between them. So I'll show you a demo of that. Let me go to the demo machine. Okay, here is an app. Let me run that for you. Okay, so this app is basically bubbles that float up the screen. So there are some tubes at the bottom, and then there is water. Imagine the blue to be water. And then bubbles are floating up the screen. And the way you can actually go and click on each of these bubbles, and then you can pop them. Okay. The way this has been implemented is that every bubble is associated with a pointer pressed handler. Okay. So that when I press on that bubble, the pointer pressed handler is invoked, and then I can, you know, give the effect that the bubble is popped. Okay. Every bubble is associated with a pointer pressed handler. Then every bubble has an animation which takes it up the screen. And as and when I instantiate a bubble, I push them into a collection. Okay. So there are two references outstanding to every bubble. There are two references. One reference will be from this pointer pressed event, because I have explicitly I add that as a handler, right? So as long as that handler is there, it's going to keep the bubble alive. The second reference will be from the collection into which I push the bubble once I instantiate it. Okay. Now, as the bubbles escape from the water, as they hit the top of the screen and escape, ideally, I should have unhooked those references. I should have removed the pointer pressed handler, and I should have removed it from the collection. So that once the bubble escapes from the top, it's free to be GC'd. Okay? But in this case, I have deliberately not done that, so that as the bubbles escape from the top, they start leaking. Okay? So let's see if the tool can find that out for us. So let me kill that bubble app. Okay. And now the way I would do that is I would launch this app and then start taking snapshots of the heap. Okay? So I'll launch the app. Now the app is running. Now I come over here and I take a snapshot of the heap. Now at the point when I take a snapshot of the heap, let's say four rows of bubbles are there. Okay, so I generate a snap of the heap. Now the app is still running. Now I can take yet another snapshot at some time in the future. And again, let's say there are three rows of bubbles. Okay, because earlier it's kind of random. So four rows and three rows. Then as long as the difference in the number of bubble instances is, say, four, which is one row worth of bubbles, as long as that difference is like four, I think we should be okay. But if the difference in the number of instances is higher, then that means there is a leak. Okay? So I'll take one more dump of that, of the heap. And I'll close the app. And I'll open the heap files. So I go into VS, and I took the dump inside of this folder. And the way I would do it is I'd open the latest dump first, and then use the older dump as the baseline. Okay. So I'll open this latest dump. And when I open it, VS goes into this debug mode and allows me to actually inspect the entire memory dump. Okay, and one of the things it shows me is that this is a new page, the mini dump file summary. It tells me, hey, what were the modules that were there in the dump? What are the types that were there in the dump? What was the heap graph that got captured? What is their connectivity? Excuse me, and so on. Now, in this case, what we are interested in is this debug managed memory entry on the right side. If you can see it, it's really small, but there's a new entry there called debug managed memory. Now, when you click on that, it allows you to select a baseline. Okay? So I'm going to go ahead and click on that. And VS allows me to pick any one of many baselines. Now, first of all, it's telling me that, hey, here is the list of objects that are available in this heap. Now, I'm going to pick an earlier dump, which was the one I took before. And now VS is going to compare these two and tell me if there's a diff. If there's a diff, you want to know, you want to account for each of them. Okay, so I'm going to filter this to only the namespace that we care about. Was there a leak? Does the diff show any particular type prominently? It shows that 40 plus instances of bubble as the diff. So between the first dump that I took and the second dump that I took, the number of instances of bubbles has gone up by 45. I told you that if it goes, it's slightly random. So between two screens, the first screen might have had, say, three rows of bubbles, and the second screen might have four rows. If the difference is between three and four and so on, it's okay. But when we see that the difference is like 45, we know that there is a leak. Okay, who's holding on to them? Now, right when you click on the bubble, right away it tells you the connectivity. It tells you who all are referencing this bubble, preventing it from getting collected, because of which it is leaking. So in this case, there are two outstanding references to it. The first reference is from the collection into which you pushed the bubble as it was getting instantiated. The second reference is from the pointer pressed handler. Okay, so this is the first reference, and this is the second reference. So since I wrote the app, I know where in the code to go and release these. But it helps to know that instances of this particular type were leaked and were leaked for this particular reason. So you can go back to the code. Here's the code for that. And I'll just uncomment these. So this removes it from the... Let me stop debugging here. This removes it from the collection. This unhooks the handler. Let me build it. And if I run it again, and if I again take two dumps, then again, this time, the difference should not be more than four, or more than a row worth of bubbles. So let me run the app. Control F5 to run the app. Now the bubbles have started. They float up the screen. Let me go back here and take a dump. So this is the third dump that I am taking. And I let the app run for some more time and then take a fourth dump. And then use the third as the baseline to compare with the fourth. Okay. So the app is running now. For some more time it has been running. And now I take another dump. So now I have four dumps. And if I repeat the same exercise, if I go in here, open file, data, process dump, I think 31 was the latest dump. I can open that. Go back to debug managed memory. It again allows me to pick a baseline. I can pick, I think 14 was the previous dump. 2014 was the previous dump. I'll pick. And the difference in the number of instances of bubbles should be in the, how many ever were there in, say, one or two rows. So it should be around four or five or whatever. Let me again filter it down to only the namespaces that we care about. And now the difference in those two heaps in terms of bubble instances is 4, right? Like I told you, this was when I took the first snapshot, there might have been 3 rows of bubbles floating up. But then I took the second snapshot, 4th row might have been added. But every time a row escapes the top, it's getting freed. So the leak has now been fixed. Okay, so the memory dump analysis tool, like I showed, is mainly meant for managed apps and mainly meant for apps that are already in production. You can take snapshots periodically and diff them. If you don't want to diff them, you can actually, you know, dig through the heap contents itself, see all of the objects, their connectivity, their counts, and see why it is a particular object is being kept alive, and so on. So that was the memory heap analysis tool. I'll go back to the PPT. Okay, let me now summarize what we have seen till now. So what we have seen till now is that consumers perceive different dimensions of performance. It's not only speed. They perceive different dimensions of performance. It has to be fast, it has to be fluid, energy efficient, memory efficient, and so on. And if they don't find that your apps are meeting expectations, performance-related information tends to be the most cited in terms of feedback. Okay, so you want to be thoughtful about approaching performance on multiple form factors, and VS provides various kinds of tools for that. We looked at the XAML UI responsiveness tool, CPU sampling, energy, and memory, and each of these tools talks in terms of the domain that it is targeted at. So the XAML tool reported in terms of elements and layout and parsing and templates and all that. CPU reported in terms of call graphs, modules, function names. Energy in terms of power states, transitions, energy usage, and so on. And memory we saw in terms of the heap, because that's what managed code is using all of the time. All of these tools, we have also kind of made it easy to discover. You don't have to hunt around in 2013. You don't have to hunt around for all of these tools. There is a single launch point, the diagnostics, performance and diagnostics hub, as we call it. There's a single launch page. You go to that launch page and all the relevant tools for your app, Surface, they light up there. Pick the app that you, the tool that you want. And most importantly, we support that remote profiling scenario, exactly the way we support remote debugging, so that you can run your workload on a device on which you want to assess performance. And all of these tools are post-mortem, so there's no live reporting going on. So you run your workload, finish the scenario, then we ship the data back into VS for analysis. So these are all post-mortem tools. And all of these tools provide end-to-end, so design time all the way up to production time. So that's the thing. So the point I want to make here is that you have to look at performance holistically. You can't just focus on latency. You can't just focus on memory. You can't just focus on any one dimension, because consumers are perceiving it across multiple dimensions. And VS has hopefully the tools, the ones that I showed you today. I hope that you can use those tools to help you address performance issues along these dimensions. Here are some related sessions. The first three are on XAML. If you want to make best use of the tools that I showed you, especially the XAML UI performance tool, if you want to make best use of these tools, you need to know a good deal about XAML. And these first three talks, I think they're already over, so you may want to see the videos of that. But they go in depth into XAML. Now, I didn't go in depth into XAML in this talk. All I did was give you a very high-level overview of the costs you need to be aware of and manage. But these talks go in-depth into what is new in XAML, what are the basics of performance in XAML, how do you squeeze every last bit of performance out of the UI framework, how do you make use of the latest and greatest controls, and so on. If you want to know what allied tools we have for the JavaScript HTML stack, similar to what we have for XAML, if you want to know what allied tools we have for JavaScript HTML stack, the last two talks I recommend. I think they are also over. You might want to catch the videos of that. They talk about similar tooling that we have for that stack. And for the XAML developer in particular, we have a bunch of best practices posted on MSDN at this link. Now, if you remember that fishbone kind of diagram that I showed, which where we did the analysis, what happens if you're slow, your startup is slow, what happens if you're seeing jittery panning and scrolling. If you remember that fishbone diagram, a lot of the best practices that are called out here can be applied at various points in that fishbone diagram. Okay, so that's it. That's all I have, folks. Thank you so much for coming.